Picture Europe, sometime before the 1400s.
Okay.
If you wanted a book, you know, you didn't just pull up an app or walk into a store. You went to a monastery.
Right.
You'd find a monk sitting at this heavy wooden desk, probably in the freezing cold, just spending his entire adult life manually copying manuscripts.
Yeah, letter by painstakingly slow letter.
Exactly. And because of that, literacy across the continent was sitting somewhere below, like 1%.
Which makes sense. I mean, the transfer of human knowledge was fundamentally bottlenecked by physical endurance. You basically had these brilliant minds acting as human photocopiers.
Right. And then the Gutenberg printing press drops. And the whole paradigm just shatters.
Oh, completely.
Now, the common assumption today is that those monks must have been terrified, you know, of losing their livelihoods.
But they were going to be out of a job.
Yeah. But the historical reality, and I guess the psychological reality too, is that the smartest among them weren't grieving the loss of their jobs at all.
No, they were celebrating.
Yes. Because for the first time in their lives, they didn't have to spend 12 hours a day just copying someone else's words. They could finally spend their time figuring out what they actually wanted to write.
Right. They transitioned from mechanical execution to strategic intent. The constraint basically moved from the muscle to the mind.
Which brings us perfectly to the mission for today's deep dive. We're looking at this really fascinating blog post from February 2026.
Yeah, part 9 of the Agentic AI Thought series.
Right. It's titled The Printing Press Moment. And our goal today is to really look at this massive, undeniable disruption happening in software development right now. We want to show you why coding is just the opening act here.
It really is just the first domino.
Exactly. It's the first domino in a chain that is going to fundamentally rewrite how every single one of us works. And, you know, we want to help you position yourself ahead of this curve before the window completely closes.
So, diving into the source material, it makes this really compelling argument that in our modern era, coding, like writing out syntax character by character, is the modern equivalent of that manual copying by the monks.
We've basically been handwriting instructions for silicon.
Exactly. But we are already stepping out of that era. Like, the shift has already happened. We are entering this environment where humans provide the intent and the AI agents, well, they do the typing.
But I mean, if programmers are just the very first monks to get their hands on the printing press, the true blast radius of this technology has to be way bigger than just tech companies in Silicon Valley, right?
Oh, absolutely. The author actually cites a semi-analysis report that quantifies this perfectly. They describe coding as merely a beachhead.
A beachhead, okay.
Yeah. The actual target is the global information work market, and we're talking about a $15 trillion sector here.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it encompasses over 1 billion workers. That's a full third of the global workforce.
Okay, let's unpack this for a second, because I want to look at why coding is the beachhead. It feels intuitive because, you know, it's software building software. But there's a mechanical reason it started there, isn't there?
There is, yeah.
It maps directly to how we all process information.
It maps identically, actually. If you strip away all the corporate jargon, almost all information work follows this, well, this four-step cycle.
Okay, what are the steps?
First, you read, meaning you ingest some sort of unstructured information. Second, you think. You apply your specific domain logic or, you know, business roles.
Right.
Third, you write. You produce a structured output. And finally, you verify. You check that output against a defined standard.
Read, think, write, verify. I mean, that's an accountant reconciling a ledger, right?
Exactly.
There's a lawyer reviewing a merger contract.
Yeah.
Or like a marketer drafting a campaign strategy.
It is the universal algorithm of white-collar labor. And software development is just the most highly structured, rigid version of that exact cycle.
That's okay. I see.
So the moment an AI agent can successfully navigate the intense logic and verification loops of building software, it has essentially proven the theoretical foundation to disrupt every other information profession.
And from what the sources say, this capability curve isn't just linear, is it?
Not at all. The source references this MATR research showing that the autonomous task horizon for AI agents, basically how long they can work without human help, is doubling every 4 to 7 months.
Every 4 to 7 months. That is a staggering metric. But what actually drives that doubling? I mean, I know we have faster compute now, but a model running longer usually just means it you know, hallucinate faster.
Right. That used to be the case.
So how are they extending the horizon without the agent just drifting off into total nonsense?
Well, it really comes down to self-correction mechanisms and massive expansions in context windows. Earlier models, they would make a tiny error in hour one, and by hour three, that error just compounded into a massive hallucination cascade.
Just a total mess.
Yeah. But today's agents utilize internal reflection loops. They don't just generate code or text. They constantly ping that verify step you mentioned earlier.
Oh, so they're checking their own work.
Exactly. They write a function, they run a silent test, they see it fail, and they rewrite it all before the user ever sees a single thing.
That is wild.
And that architectural leap is why the current mainstream capability sits at about 4.8 hours of autonomous work.
So you've got an agent grinding on a single complex problem for nearly 5 hours straight.
Right. And think about this. If that metric doubles one more time, we hit the 8-hour mark.
Which is the standard workday.
Exactly. When agents can hold state and execute against a goal for an entire workday, the whole definition of an employee changes. Anthropic is already seeing this blur internally, actually.
Really? How so?
Well, the traditional software engineer title is sort of dissolving there. You have product managers, designers, the engineering manager, even the finance team. They are all coding and shipping production software now.
See, I look at that and think, aren't we just redefining the word coding at this point?
What do you mean?
Well, it used to mean you had to learn the machine's obscure language, right? Mm. Python, Rust, C++, plus one. You had to translate human ambiguity into rigid syntax.
Right, yeah.
But now, the machine has basically learned to speak our language. So coding doesn't really mean writing loops anymore. It just means giving a highly specific, logically sound set of instructions in plain English.
That's a great way to put it. The syntax is totally abstracted away. What's left is just your understanding of systems, user needs, and the fundamental business problem. You are managing the outcome.
Which fundamentally changes the relationship we have with the software. If I'm just giving instructions in plain English, this isn't a static tool anymore.
No, not at all.
It's not like a spreadsheet waiting for my input. It's an active participant.
And that is the crucial pivot in the author's argument. We are moving from analyzing how these agents process data to how they actually navigate our social ecosystems. Anthropic's launch of Cowork, which is how they adapted their Claude code model for general computing tasks, is a massive signal here. Agents are expanding their mandate beyond the coding environment and into the broader operating system.
Okay, there is a story in the source material about this that absolutely blew my mind.
Oh, the Boris Cherney one.
Yes. It's an anecdote from Boris Cherney, who is the creator of Claude Code. So he asks an agent to build a new feature, right?
Yeah.
The agent starts ripping through the company's code base, and it hits a logic wall. It basically doesn't understand why a specific legacy system was architected a certain way.
Which happens to human developers all the time.
Exactly. But instead of hallucinating a guess or just throwing an error back to Boris, the agent checks the Git blame. It identifies the specific human engineer who wrote that code 3 years ago.
Unbelievable.
And then it pings the Slack API and messages that human directly on Slack to ask for clarification.
Yeah.
And once the human answers, the agent just says thanks and goes back to building.
Just look at the multi-step reasoning happening under the hood there. I mean, the agent recognized its own knowledge deficit. It deduced a method for finding the missing context.
Right.
It authenticated into a human communication channel. And then it formatted its query as a socially acceptable message. It navigated human social infrastructure completely autonomously.
It's incredible.
And the source also points out Anthropic's plugins feature, which was built entirely over a weekend by a self-organizing agent, Swarm.
Swarms are fascinating to me. Because that isn't just one giant model doing everything, right?
No, it's highly specialized.
It's this architecture where a router agent takes the main goal, breaks it into chunks, delegates those to specialized coder agents, and then has QA agents reviewing the output, just bouncing it back and forth.
While the human is out having a weekend.
Exactly. The human is completely removed from the execution loop.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to go back to that Slack ping for a second.
Yeah.
Imagine you're at your desk.
Yeah.
Right? You get a notification. You think it's your buddy asking about lunch, but it's an AI agent saying, hey, your database schema from 2024 is blocking my current build. Can you explain this dependency?
Right, yeah.
How do you not immediately start treating that software as a colleague? The psychological line doesn't just blur there, it completely vanishes.
The boundary dissolves entirely. When an entity manages its own workflow, delegates tasks, and initiates communication with you only when it requires human judgment, I mean, you are collaborating at that point. You aren't operating a tool.
Okay, so if I have a digital colleague who can navigate my company's Slack, build features over a weekend, and pull its own data, my brain immediately goes to the economics of the software industry.
Oh, it gets really interesting there.
Right. I look at the massive SaaS company software as a service, the ones charging 50 or 100 bucks a month per user. Why do I need to pay for a project management SaaS or a CRM if I can just ask my agent to organize my files and track my client communications directly?
Well, you've hit on the existential threat to the tech industry's current business model. The author argues we're essentially watching the structural collapse of SaaS.
Wow. Structural collapse.
Because the three defensive moats that have made SaaS a license to print money for the last decade, they are evaporating simultaneously.
Okay, let's think through those moats. The first one has to be data lock-in, right?
Exactly.
Companies make it incredibly painful to export your data, so you just keep paying the subscription fee because it's easier. But if I have an agent that can parse any unstructured format, read raw databases, and migrate data seamlessly, that switching cost basically drops to zero.
The friction of data migration completely disappears. Agents act as these universal translators for raw information.
And the second mode is usually the UI, right? Workflow lock-in.
Yeah, the interface.
They force you to spend weeks learning their specific dashboards and proprietary menus, so you don't want to learn a competitor system.
But I mean, an agent doesn't need a UI.
Not at all. I don't need to click through seven menus to generate a report. I just tell the agent, in English, generate the Q3 report.
The graphical user interface becomes obsolete for most administrative tasks. Natural language is the ultimate, universally adopted interface.
Which leaves the third one, the integration mode. It used to be a total nightmare to get your HR software to talk to your payroll software without, like, expensive custom APIs.
Right. And this is where the underlying mechanics really matter. The source brings up the Model Context Protocol, or MCP.
Okay, what is that?
To understand the impact of MCP, think of it as the USB-C cable for AI agents.
Oh, I like that analogy.
Before USB-C, every device needed a proprietary charging cable, right? Well, before MCP, if an AI model wanted to read data from your local machine, your Slack, and your Google Drive, developers had to write bespoke API integrations for every single service.
Which takes forever.
Exactly. MCP standardizes that entirely. It provides a universal protocol for agents to securely access local and remote data sources completely out of the box.
So data is fluid, UIs are irrelevant, and everything connects instantly.
Exactly. And when you combine those three factors, you expose the reality of what a SaaS product actually is.
Which is?
It is simply an information workflow that a company crystallized into code, hosted on the cloud, and then sold back to you with a 75% gross margin.
Man.
If an agent can execute that exact workflow dynamically, on demand, those massive margins represent an incredible arbitrage opportunity.
This perfectly ties into the author's concept of disposable software. I mean, think about it. SaaS is like paying a premium every month for a frozen microwave dinner.
That's a great way to look at it.
Right. It's rigid, it's identical for every customer, and you're paying a huge markup for the packaging.
Yeah.
But having an agentic swarm is like having an invisible personal chef.
Exactly.
You tell it your dietary restrictions, what's in your fridge right now,
yeah,
and it cooks a bespoke meal just for you, and then the kitchen disappears.
Yeah.
So where does this leave the tech giants who are, you know, selling the microwave dinners?
Yeah. In a deeply contradictory position. And Microsoft serves as the prime example in the text.
Right, because they are everywhere.
Microsoft is brilliantly positioned on the infrastructure side. They provide the Azure compute power that runs Anthropic and OpenAI's models, so they are selling the picks and shovels.
Making money either way.
Yes, but simultaneously, those exact models are being weaponized against Microsoft's core application monopolies, mainly Office 365 and GitHub.
It's the classic innovator's dilemma, just playing out in real time. The author actually points out that Microsoft's Copilot launched a full year before Claude Code, but it barely shifted the actual workflow paradigm for developers.
And there's a reason for that. Copilot was built for the old world. It was designed as an assistant, basically an autocomplete engine to help you type syntax faster.
Right. It still required the human to drive.
Exactly. Claude Code and these modern agents assume control of the wheel. They own the entire workflow.
Okay, but let me stop you right there. If these agents are acting as free personal chefs, and the compute costs are trivial, I mean, the source notes of Max Plan costs about the same as a couple of coffees or a single meal out.
Right. It's incredibly cheap.
Then why am I still seeing people drowning in spreadsheets? Why hasn't this completely saturated the market yet?
Because the bottleneck has shifted. It is no longer a technology problem, and it is certainly no longer a cost problem.
Okay, then what is it?
It is an education problem. The author frames this through what he calls the cognitive funnel. At the very top of this funnel, 99.99% of people simply lack the technical awareness of what a multi-step agentic loop can actually accomplish today.
They still think we're in the era of chatbots writing clunky marketing copy.
Exactly. They think it's just a text generator. Then, of the tiny fraction who do grasp the capabilities, 99% of them lack the orchestration skills to actually use them. And of the remaining sliver, most still apply an outdated mental model. They treat the agent like a sophisticated search engine rather than an autonomous collaborator. And every layer of that funnel represents a massive loss of human potential.
The critique, the source levels at our education system regarding this funnel is brutal. And honestly, hard to argue with.
Oh, it attacks the foundational design of modern schooling. Our educational institutions are completely optimized for standardization and memorization.
Right, taking a test.
We train students to ingest information and output a highly specific, standardized format. But that mechanical reproduction is precisely what AI executes in milliseconds, flawlessly.
It's like we are pouring years of tuition and debt into training humans to be the monks copying the manuscripts.
That is exactly what we are doing. Meanwhile, the system ignores the very skills that now command a premium. Things like navigating ambiguity, high-level decision-making, systems thinking, and prompt engineering.
Which is essentially just the art of asking the right questions.
Yes. We are mass-producing executors in an economy that suddenly only values managers.
And the penalty for being an executor right now is compounding, isn't it?
Rapidly. The author calls AI a cognitive gap amplifier.
A cognitive gap amplifier.
Yeah. Historically, a brilliant, highly efficient worker might produce, you know, 2 or 3 times more output than an average peer. But today,
yeah,
if you put a strategically minded manager who orchestrates a swarm of AI agents up against an average worker who is manually typing out reports, the productivity gap doesn't just double, it expands to 100x.
100 times the output.
Yeah.
That is wild. And the author's own journey maps this perfectly, too.
It really does.
In 2023, he was using Cursor just for basic autocomplete. But by early 2026, he built this massively complex unified application called PanPanMal.
Yeah, that app is a great example.
It's an app handling Myers-Briggs typing, dream interpretation, and traditional Lu-Ren divination, which, if you don't know, is a highly complex astrological calculation system. And he didn't manually code it. He used a framework called OpenClaw deployed on Google Cloud Platform.
The backend architecture there is really critical to understand. OpenClaw acts as an orchestration layer. It allows the agent to route specific tasks to different models, manage memory, and interface with enterprise tools like FaceShoe.
Right.
So the author wasn't writing the divination logic himself. He was configuring the orchestration layer so the agents could handle the logic themselves. His labor shifted entirely from execution to intent.
But looking at that educational critique we talked about, it's daunting.
Oh, sure.
If our school spent 20 years wiring us to be executors, how do you actively break that programming? If a listener wants to rewire their brain from an executor to a manager today, what is the actual mechanism for doing that?
It really requires a daily conscious refusal to do the mechanical work.
Just flat out refusing it.
Yeah. When you face a complex task, your instinct is always to ask, how do I do this? You have to force a hard stop and replace that with, how do I construct a prompt that provides enough context, constraints, and success criteria for an agent to do this for me?
You have to practice treating yourself as the architect, not the bricklayer.
Exactly.
Okay, so to synthesize what we've pulled from this source today, the biggest realization is that the paradigm shift isn't theoretical anymore. It's measurable.
Very much so.
The source notes that 4% of all commits on GitHub are already originating from Claude code. Top-tier developers are straight up abandoning manual syntax. The $15 trillion information market is being actively hollowed out and repriced around orchestration.
And the window to capitalize on this asymmetry is open right now, but it will inevitably close as the technology normalizes. Those who grasp the shift are sprinting. They're multiplying their cognitive reach by a factor of 100. And those still acting as executors, they are effectively moving backward.
Which brings us to the core thesis. When the cost of building software and executing complex logic plummets to absolute zero, the only remaining scarce resource is your unique intent,
right?
Your taste, your ability to look at the world and identify a problem worth solving.
the printing press is built. You no longer have to spend your life copying. The burden is now completely on you to decide what you want to write.
But you know, that leaves us with a totally different, slightly unnerving question to mull over.
What's that?
If the sauce moats are dead, right, and we move to this era of disposable software, where everyone has an invisible personal chef whipping up bespoke applications for an audience of one, what happens to our shared digital reality?
Oh, wow. It fractures. We lose the common ground.
Exactly. I mean, for the last 20 years, we've complained about clunky UIs and annoying software updates, but at least we were all complaining about the same software.
Right. We had a shared experience.
We shared the same digital architecture in our workplaces. If your agent builds you a completely custom workflow that perfectly fits your brain, and my agent builds me a totally different one, we solve our problems perfectly, sure. But we lose the shared language of collaboration.
We basically become hyper-productive, but we do it entirely alone.
Exactly. Welcome to the era of the software of one.